that people come for. So we will immediately have to go back and look, otherwise we won't know what to do with this measure. I mean, if this is not, that's my main problem with this, that I won't know what to do with it, unless I go and check for what they've done.
Right, and there's a certain, I think, amount of responsibility on the hospital's part to do that sort of legwork, I guess, for QI purposes.
Yeah, but does it make sense that you report something for a public, which is sort of not really helpful, even those who do it, much less to, well, I don't know.
Let me clarify your premise. Your premise is, because you just articulated your premise, people working in various institutions are going to be faced with a statistic that shows that they're higher than what was expected. Why would that be the case if peeling back, your real explanation was that the reason for the emergency department had nothing to do with the admission? The point, we're not trying to isolate the interventionists inside the hospital here. The point is, these are two healthcare conditions, and soon we have a pneumonia version that's going to go to another committee. The point is, we're trying to build up one cohort at a time. Today's AMI and heart failure. On another day, it'll be pneumonia, and eventually it might be everybody. But the point is to say, here's a hospital that's not a silo. It's working with other institutions, professionals in a delivery system. And are the patient trajectories better where we do our work?
I think that part of the misunderstanding about the fact that this doesn't cost anything is that if individual measures that are reported do cost something because they require personnel to investigate what has gone on, which I think is probably one of the main reasons that the composite measure needs to be examined very carefully, because it then ask a hospital, look at your continuum of care and identify yourselves where the biggest bang for the buck is in terms of quality assurance, quality improvement. But a single measure like the ED visit, which might be a signal event, doesn't necessarily inform an actionable program on the part of a hospital in isolation. That means that they have to look at other factors, and that's wonderful, but as a single measure, it probably is the least convincing of the three that it has an actionable result.
Yeah, the ED thing could be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Let's say I decrease my readmissions, but I push them all and I have this giant emergency department where I keep them there, you know, for 23.9 hours. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I guess...
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And so, therefore, the readmission itself does not tell the whole story. Just like the evaluation management of the telephone story, that's your point. You look at the suite of measures, which eventually could include the complications and mortality, to say, how is this delivery system performing with patients who are discharged across a variety of things?
But if I'm not responsible because my patient lives next to the ED that has one bed, so that if they come in and complain of any cardiac symptom, they're automatically admitted. But I'm taking responsibility for their admission.
The notion of healthcare going forward is not that we stand back and say, well, that's their fault, right?
Well, I agree. And we talk about it all as hospital-based, but I think of this as, you know, CMS is paying whoever they are for the outpatient care of this person, and it may not have anything to do with my hospital. And it's really, if I can't get an appointment because they're busy, then it makes me look bad, but it should, obviously it's going to make someone else look bad, and they're going to have to report these statistics to CMS as
that's
well.
Exactly,
so it's
right.
A joint, somebody will start calling somebody up on the phone, I guess.
That's right.
That's the whole idea, which is a positive.
That is the whole idea.
Karen? Yeah, I just wanted to mention we had some of these same conversations with the prior project in hospital readmission, The idea here with these measures is in line with NQF's approach of wanting to look more across episodes of care or through an episode, and it has these types of measures have the advantage of really driving some system changes. So as we've talked about, it's not so much about, you know, blaming someone or saying that the hospital responsibility stops here. It's really trying to get hospitals and the post-hospital providers trying to work together to prevent these hospitalizations. Now, I'm not sure that, as you were talking about, whether this adds more information, but I think that idea of being able to look at what happens to patients afterwards is in line with the concept of looking beyond just the time at the hospital and trying to assign that it's only for whatever they were in the hospital the first place that they came back, because we're looking at the entire patient and are their care needs being met.
And the problem, though, is that you're publicly reporting for that hospital. That hospital has absolutely no can't is not responsible for the care afterwards. It's putting the hospital in a tough position. It's good for quality, but I don't know, public reporting is something where the hospital doesn't have the responsibility for that.
But you would have then the same issue with hospital readmission measures.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the question. They are responsible, to some extent responsible for the transition. I mean, what happens to the person after they go home from the hospital, and was suitable follow-up arranged and so on and so forth? I mean, the hospital, that should occur prior to hospital discharge, so I think that the hospital does have some responsibility there. They're not the only player in the game, certainly. There's another point that I wanted to raise, though, which relates to the risk adjustment model. And one concern I have, I actually agree with looking at all cause, whatever it is, readmissions or ED visits or whatever it is. It's less subject to gaming, for one thing. You always have, if you're looking at specific causes, you always have the issue of was it classified correctly, was the ICD-9 code correct and whatnot, and so I think there's some limitations to that. But I think with specifically respect to ED visits, we know that certain patient populations use the ED sort of as their PCP, and anything comes up as a cold or a scratch or whatever, and they come to the ED rather than contacting their PCP. And so I think that the risk adjustment model needs to somehow take that into consideration. I don't know if it's a geographic issue or zip code or some other thing that would be available in an administrative database that would allow you to do that. If not, I think that it kind of unfairly penalizes the environment in which that's the situation where people use the ED. And it's the same thing we talked about this morning. It's more likely to be the indigent populations rather than the wealthy suburbs in which that's going to be an issue. And to that extent, I think that the low C statistic is problematic. I agree that the C statistic is not the be-all and the end-all. There's lots of limitations to it. We do the best we can with the data we have available for it. But a low C statistic suggests that there's lots of variability that we're not accounting for in our risk adjustment model, and I think that this is an important area.
Well, maybe, yeah, again, if the measure was going to be used by other indigent populations, not Medicare, then you're right. The reasons for the ED visits might be different to a certain degree than they are, might be for a covered Medicare population. And similarly, if this became an all-payer measure, then to the extent to which an institution or delivery system had different proportions of indigent in their discharge population, then you'd want to adjust for that. Probably, although you're running up against an SUF philosophy, which says that we don't try to adjust, which means to forgive lower performance for lower resource populations in hospitals.
Right, and I agree it's a difficult issue, and I don't know what the answer is, but I think that there are cultural differences in patterns in which medical care is requisitioned, so to speak. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the hospital is doing a bad job.
It's likely that the hospital that scores poorly on this, if there are financial penalties, so you're actually depriving care to the people that need it the most.
Well, that's a different question about the relative merits of value-based purchasing. But
you thought when you looked at these variations, the distribution among hospitals of action, risk center rate, mean that there is significant variations among hospitals between the, let's say, the best and the percentiles and the worst percentiles?
Well, so like there is in the readmission rate, so no more, no less. It's modest at best. And what it does is send a signal that if you want to improve, we're going to monitor and reward that improvement.
I don't know.
Well, even if they're identical, it doesn't mean that there isn't room for improvement.
I think
since we're getting towards talking about the continuity of care, maybe we should move on to the E&M measure, because that will continue, I think, the same argument and same question.
Let's keep going. This is number three. So it talks about E&M, and as far as I was aware from what was given to me, there is no such thing except in the area of psychiatry. Is that correct?
In terms of enforced measures, NCQA and the HEDIS, yeah, has psychiatry has follow-up measures as a explicit HEDIS.
Okay, and I actually didn't go through to read those, but from what I can understand, the actual what E&M is was specified by the guideline recommendations. Is that what an E&M would be? Or is the actual what the evaluation and management service is vague and undefined?
No. There's quite a history in CMS and otherwise of dividing CPT codes into various categories, and E&M is a pretty well-established category.
Okay, but as a provider, does the components of what it would be to me and what I did, is that what was supposed to be specified by the guidelines to be able to, as a suggested E&M, such as the follow-up visit, you know, these are the things you should go over in the follow-up visit, is that?
It's not prescriptive in the sense of what the provider is supposed to be doing, but if, for example, it's an office visit tending to, bill for the sake of treating somebody with a given diagnosis, for example, is an E&M visit as opposed to some surgical procedure, for example, or an immunization,
right,
which fall into different categories.
If I may, there are specific CPT codes for specific types of visits that are of varying length. It does specify in the CPT manual what level of review occurs in those visits to be able to bill that certain code. So,
actually, some pharmacologist, somebody is discharged, my patient acute MI comes back in 5 days because I routinely see them a week after discharge, this would be already captured in EMS. This would be captured in that measure. Yes.
And an office, an ambulatory office.
No, just scheduled visits, issue.
Right.
Yes.
So this would have to be at least a 99232 type of visit or something like that.
I don't know the exact code, sorry.
I'm used to checking things off. But this doesn't require that it be a physician. It could be a nurse practitioner.
I'm correct.
And it could be an incident two visit with an incident two visit for a staff nurse with a supervision by a physician.
Yes.
Okay.
So would it include like nurse telephone calls or
no? It has to be, well, in our database, it has to be billable to Medicare. So it's not an email exchange. It's not a
by patient
in
and off. Yeah. What about like a home health visit?
Yeah.
That would be
picked up. Yeah. And what about a nurse?
Well, let me clarify. We looked across not only the normal physician bills as outpatient, but also long-term care settings such as nursing homes and home health visits for observing, evaluation, and management visits. So if it comes part of home health, if it's delivered through that, yes, it would count. Not an aide coming in to change the sheet.
What's that?
You know, not just a. Again, we're looking for professional observation of the patient for the sake of evaluation and management. We're looking for those codes regardless of setting or regardless of the credentials of the provider.
But as an example, so if a patient has heart failure and MI, then. You have one visit and you get credit for both on your scoring?
Well, we're looking at the cohorts respectively, AMI and heart failure, because that was the reason for the admission. And so if a patient has both, but had an admission that was attributable to AMI or to heart failure, then the same criterion would be applied in the 30-day period and the evaluation would be registered. As being successful.
But it just has to be a billing level. It doesn't say, there's no recommendations as to what it needs to be.
Right, it doesn't get into the content of whether it was a successful or a well-advised visit. It's just, was it a professional evaluation and management?
Okay. Okay, and so the guideline recommendations in there don't necessarily have to be part of what is actually done at the visit.
Correct.
In order to meet the guideline. Okay, so those were
Let me ask a question. So let's say the whoever is reported to having a higher percent of patients with EMN would be a good thing.
Yes.
Are we turning that positive into positive or whatever? Okay. When we get to the component. Positive is good. Okay, and I think I think the first brought the whole thing in terms of it's a great idea, but in terms of the MI part, there's not a whole lot of evidence for E&M, right? And that's what you said.
You mean
area.
In terms of professional recommendations?
Is that what you mean by evidence for?
No, I think in terms of I interpreted that as a summary of evidence, meaning as how well it is attributed to this or been studied in this disease.
Mm-hmm. What criteria are we on right now? We're on
it's still
important.
Yeah.
Let me explain that criterion
okay.
for evidence.
Right.
We basically say either an outcome or evidence of effectiveness or relationship to the outcome. And if it's an outcome measure, then we want to know about the relevance of that outcome for the particular patient population and if there are evidence of processes that influence that outcome. So it's a little more difficult to think about evidence when you're talking about an outcome than if you were talking about a process measure. So process measures are easier in terms of, you know, is there evidence that giving aspirin at a certain time influences the patient outcomes? So for outcome measures, it's that it has to be relevant to describing, you know, desired outcomes for that patient population. And if there is evidence of processes that influence that outcome, that's what we'd like to see.
And is this an outcome measure?
Yeah.
In my mind, it's more of a process measure.
Right. We would actually consider this a process measure. So it's a question that staff had of why this is even being risk adjusted.
Well, hopefully we don't get barred by semantics, but the point is well taken. In that sense, readmission an event, a process,
well,
or an outcome?
Well, this, you're right, this gets a little muddy. Oftentimes, readmission, emergency department visits, the reason they are often categorized as outcomes is that they are really a proxy for deterioration of patient status. So you don't have the specific, you know, health status indicators, but generally patients come to the ED and are readmitted to the hospital because their condition has deteriorated. So those have been typically categorized as outcome measures, pretty much proxy for the outcome of deterioration in health status.
Right. And so if they're following from that same logic, seeing anybody is also in that sense an outcome measure and a possible sign of deterioration. A patient who's doing very, very well may go on without seeing anybody, not readmitted, not go to the emergency department, and not even bothering going to a scheduled visit. But the point here is to say, let's put these utilization events all in the looking at them all through the same lens, because the propensity for any patient to contact the healthcare system is inevitably correlated at a group level with severity and disease. And so therefore, by controlling for the severity and disease in terms of setting up the expected level that's driven by the severity, is done uniformly for all three of these outcome measures. And then having set the table that way, then the delivery systems can improve their performance, diagnose and improve their performance by trying to reduce the adverse events and improve upon what would otherwise be expected in terms of even the evaluation and management system.
I think, you know, at least in discussions about care coordination and transition, the visit would be seen as a process of care that should happen, not as an indication of deterioration, but as a means of getting the care on track and preventing
right.
the
incrementally,
issues.
That's true. But there's still an underlying expectation or need for somebody to see a doctor if they start to deteriorate and feel sick. And so therefore, I mean, this is not a randomized study. This is not a saying that follow-up visits never occur unless they're planned, unless they're scheduled, unless somebody thought proactively. People go to the doctor when they feel sick. If they just were in the hospital and they were sick and they were deteriorating and it was quicker and sicker, they're going to tend to have to see somebody quicker, regardless of the setting. And we want to take that risk-adjusted expectation, set it aside, and say, now the message to the delivery system is, if you want to improve, then you go beyond what is expected and you start to schedule people more often or more reliably have them follow up. And that, yes, that's supposed to have a proactive preventive effect. That is true.
But there's no level of, I don't know, billability or whatever that you could identify a well visit versus a deteriorating visit? Because what you'd rather...
No. So that's why we say we measure the hospital or the delivery system on its observed versus expected based on clinical severity, and then they can improve their performance by doubling down on the care coordination, which is the point here.
I think this is the difference between the what and the how that I was mentioning before. The what is this a measure that's worth pursuing, and the how is how it's implemented on an individual basis. And there are professional societies, the Heart Failure Society of America and the IHI have all sorts of rules and guidelines and helping points that would allow a care organization to implement this particular visit and inform what the visit involves. I think it is an outcome measure because if you look at the six patient education core measures of hospitalization and heart failure, for instance, the handoff is to take those six measures and have them followed up as a handoff in an E&M visit. There is no requirement, I guess, in AMI core measures for a follow-up visit, but that's the way it's constructed.
Well, but is that the same way of saying it's not recommended or it's not a good idea?
No. I'm saying it is a good idea. I'm arguing that it is an outcome measure based on the trajectory of care that began in the hospital.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I guess my question, very simplistically, is why isn't expected 100%?
Yeah, I mean,
why isn't it just as simple as that? Why is it more complicated?
Well, when I'm using the word expected, I'm using it in a statistical sense, which is to say when you're compared to norms, what is expected means it's sort of like the central tendency. What tends to be observed across averages.
Yeah,
it's not expected, but you're right. Implicitly, there is an expectation here is that the delivery systems will exert their influence, not control, but their influence to be able to decrease the prevalence of adverse events and increase the prevalence or the occurrence of positive, proactive, healthy, you know, health-sustaining events such as evaluation and management. In that sense, you would hope for a very, very high score. But it's not the same thing as the statistical sense.
Right.
It's what's expected given the severity of the patient population.
So my question, I guess the corollary to the question I'm really asking is why do we need to look at it through the statistical lens? Why aren't we looking through it through the most, you know, meaningful part is if we expect all patients to be followed up at their hospitalization, isn't it just as simple as that?
We could have proposed it semantically differently and saying that our opinion is that every patient should be seen by a follow-up visit. And then someone's going to say, well, who are you to say? And then we get into, well, what is the predictive ability of that sort of thing? I mean, we're not relying on RCTs. We don't have, you know, an evidence base that says when you randomize people to follow up, and you randomize people to no follow-up, that we can somehow see what the incremental effect is on readmissions and ED visits. So we're trying to take the naturalistic point of view here and say, all right, let's look to see what the norms are. Let's see how people compare to the norms and give them a chance to improve upon wherever they stand, even if they're the best. This is a signal to say, keep going, get better.
Can you help me understand something here? I'm having trouble with the directionality of this. So I think we've agreed that it's a good thing if they come back for a planned visit. So it's good to have more. But what I think I've heard you say, and I would also agree, is if you discharge people in really lousy condition, they're more likely to come back.
That's right.
So this is a measure that I don't...
That's
if you do a bad job, you're going to score better.
on the one measure.
On this measure.
Although, well...
not necessarily. They could die.
Then that gets into that.
They could die.
Yeah, again, I mean, I mean, I always have difficulty when people say, let's look at this measure in isolation. But you're right. It's true that if everybody was discharged so sick that they couldn't go home, they had to go see the doctor, then these hospitals would be good. You also have very high readmission rates, very high ED visits, and very high mortality rates in this cohort.
So you're right. It looks, as a portfolio, it makes sense. In isolation, it doesn't make so much sense, at least to me.
Yeah, so in other words, you bought my sort of outcome argument in the sense that this is the... What happens is an expression of severity, as much as anything, in terms of the natural occurrence rates of these things, including seeing a doctor.
And I know for stroke patients, we have a hard time. We get the patients, we actually have everybody come back in our hospital, and half of them don't come back because they're too good and they don't want to come back. So the people that we have come back are the mild ones. The ones that actually do great, they don't want to come back. The mild ones come back. The ones that are too severe are actually picked up in other ways.
Yeah.
We actually have to try to get everybody, but we just have a compliance issue.
That's right. There are natural limits to what anybody can do. Patient compliance comes into it. Other delivery system factors come into it.
They could be incentivized by the managing the preparation. Does this have to be provided on a different day of discharge?
Yes. Yes,
yeah,
the
there's a minimum.
That's
going to
go up.
It's going to go up. Is
there
a virus?
The evaluation and management visit has to occur at least a day after the discharge. So it's not like see somebody on the way out kind of thing.
Discharge them at 11:59 and we have the service running at 12:01 midnight.
And similarly, the emergency visits we're talking about now are emergency room outpatient visits that cannot be occurring on the same days of readmission.
Or an E&M.
Not true. The E&M visit also has to occur before the emergency department visit. Should be
credited
by a day, at least.
By a day?
Yeah, so we're trying to separate. It's not like, you know, you go to see the doctor, go to the emergency room, get readmitted all on the same day. That's just a readmission.
Is a common scenario.
That does
happen very often.
It might happen very often, but we're not trying to track people on their way to the hospital. We're trying to say what is, in a sort of time-ordered effect, what's happening to the patient. What are the trajectories?
Could I just follow up? Someone asked the question whether this included a home health professional visit would be counted in the numerator, and you said yes. But I don't see any codes here or data sources that would necessarily pick that up. Is this strictly physician or primary care visit?
No, we had billable services from home health agencies, and we used them as indicators for evaluation and management services. I'm sorry, the documentation.
Well, maybe I'm missing it. I'm looking under numerator details, and it says HCPCS E&M codes, but those I don't believe are generally used in home health.
We didn't take any home health visit as indicating a professional evaluation and management. Sometimes home health can do custodial kinds of things.
Right. No, but they can't do custodial care unless they have skilled care. Home health
oversight.
Right.
Right.
So they would, if they have home health aid services, they would always have skilled services along with it. So,
well, in principle, we looked at the long-term care settings as well as the home health billing for evidence of an evaluation and management. We need to clarify something in the documentation. We'll do that. But just so the committee knows, it's not like if someone's being followed up avidly by a home health, we're sort of overlooking that as if there's no care transition and no care coordination. No, that would be acknowledged.
As an E&M, though. There has to be an E&M documentation of that.
Yes.
I'm just saying that's not the terminology that's used in home health, so I'm just curious of what codes you would be pulling from the home health bill.
Okay, so starting back again at the beginning.
So 1A relates to the high impact. So okay, in terms of looking at the, I guess I'm still stuck on the bidirectionality. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And then how do you, it'll have an impact, but does it wash, I don't know. Are you happy, are people happy with C or P?
C.
Bad. It's a bad thing.
Can I, I don't want to intrude here, but can I just say for everyone, maybe everybody already knows this, but just for everyone's sake, in the composite measure, obviously an evaluation measurement counts as a good thing, and an ED counts as a bad thing, and a readmission counts as a bad thing, but not equally so. Admittedly, arbitrarily, shall we say,
we'll get to that.
There's a higher weight given to the negative event of a readmission than there is to the negative event of an ED visit.
Opportunity for improvement, that was a C. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a focus on transitions, right? Opportunity for improvement. I think the summary of the evidence that they have, though, all we have is the psychiatric data. I don't know if that's why I gave it a P. It was. There is no, anybody else know of any data from that, for this type of service? Like I said, I was telling someone out there, I know one of my friends, two nurse practitioners and physicians quit their job at a hospital and are formed just such a service. So, they must have known something better. And again, nothing, I don't know, does anything on the heart failure talk about medication adherence? I don't know, and some of that data, that's why I put, there's nothing really here on medication adherence, and there's something in the guidelines related to adherence should be discussed prior to discharge. But
well, Dr. Schirsacker, Dr. Fonerau at UCLA has done quite a bit of work on adherence and reduction of readmission, so I think there is some data both for MI and.
Right, so I would try and add some of that, and I include some of the data on the MI part that could be cited to strengthen this and include it in an example of a recommendation on what to discuss. Is that one? Are we done with one? So 2A.
Okay.
I mean, 2A is the specifications, and I guess it's a vague thing, but it's documented whatever reason they are being changed. And then the reliability testing was the Dartmouth Atlas sample, and that is that used for other E&M calculations or no?
Well, in reference to Dartmouth Atlas is the fact that Dartmouth, as we know, which has the Atlas project, gets a 20% random sample of Medicare beneficiaries, which is a national 20% sample for whom we have all covered A and B services. So that's, and it shows all of the specificity of the billable codes, including the CPTs and the evaluation of measurements and so forth. So it's not like it's a, you know, special, unusual data. It just happens to be a very large file that covers a representative random sample.
And what did we just give this on the readmission, the one we just did? I don't know that it's any better than the grade we gave to the previous.
It was C.
It was C.
Yeah. That was based on the on the low statistics.
Well, here they have correlation, right? That's all that I could see.
Yeah, but the statistic is the same. No difference in strength.
Right. So I think we should probably give it the same as the other one with this.
Okay.
And I think that would have been the same with the validity data, correct?
Correct. That's what we said.
P also,
it was a P.
Mm-hmm. I guess some of the exclusions I was still not going to, still had some questions about the people who are counted and not counted. There's people that have no contact information, I guess. I guess you have to have a contact information. So when we discharge the homeless back to a shelter, that's their contact information that we're going to use to contact them when they miss their visit. And the patients who are do they just talk about a 30-day time period? So patients, when they get readmitted for that 30 days, they don't get counted again in the discharge? Like, is it exclusive? So you don't go into the, are they excluded then from the data?
If someone is readmitted within 30 days?
Yeah, so you have your first admission, you're readmitted,
yeah.
Then those people even more need their E&M probably. If they were readmitted within 30 days, but those people aren't going to be included at all in any. And how long afterwards you go back into your, after that 30 days, you would go back into being eligible to be included in the data?
Yes.
Okay.
Does that account for all-cause readmission? When you start again, you're starting based on the primary discharge diagnosis, on the readmission?
Well, the first thing we did was to look at all Medicare admissions during the year and deciding, using, again, some of the same sort of notions of clean period that Yale did, say what were, which of those hospital admissions were index admissions, meaning that they were the first hospitalization to occur within, after a 30-day period of not being in the hospital. We tagged all admissions as being either being index admissions, or, of course, if they were within 30 days, they're therefore correspondingly tagged as being readmissions. And so therefore, to be in the AMI or the heart failure cohort as an index admission, it has to be for AMI or heart failure after a period of not being in the hospital for at least 30 days. And that's why what you said is true also. So once it gets into a readmission, it's not, they're not being monitored as if it was an index admission anymore. You flunked the test, basically, because the readmission occurred.
Could we go back to the question that you had about the exclusion?
Yeah.
What was that question?
Well, that was the one. Who is if you happen to come back in, are you excluded or?
Oh, right.
And then he asked a question, and basically it's for either, right? So you're looking at both of those,
right.
The one or the other.
Right.
You're going to be in there. So should 2G be NA then, since there's NA? And
2G or 2D?
G. I don't know if that's
D is the exclusion.
Yeah. So that would be D, as long as that was clarified as to that you are excluded.
So 2D is a C.
Yeah.
Right.
So they would be all these Cs themselves. The NA.
Since you said that, let's go back to 2B and C on the reliability and validity. If you're saying that essentially the rating on this one is the same as the one previously?
That was C. Those two are the P's.
I recorded those as M, actually. Was I in a different room?
For the ED?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, before?
Yeah.
Yeah, I must have been in a different room.
Which one? P.
I saw M.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, it is an M.
Okay.
Okay, so the question is, do you feel they're the same? I think internal consistency would be helpful for the committee.
Maybe
better.
I don't think
so. The question at hand is,
well, that is what they were saying.
2D and
is it using the same data? It's using the same data, so I don't. How can it be better?
Well, because it's a different that many measures.
I think maybe it's under readmission.
It might be different because it's a different event that's being captured. And are we changing that? Well, that's, I just heard Sarah say that it was the same.
Right?
So
Yeah, it's 0.55.
Yeah,
yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, that's why.
So,
Amy,
so are you saying M or P?
Yeah.
Did you want to rate these the same as you rated the EV measure on these two subcriteria?
The two, because it's using the same database and it has the same piece. Can you say that it would be better? Or do we want to change the other one? Does that matter?
If they're different, I'd want to capture the reason they're different. If they're the same, I'll say they're the same.
The second one,
yeah, I would say that would be the same.
Okay.
And the exclusion without explanation.
Okay.
Now, do you really mean to say that it's the same, or did you question the underlying validity of the measurement, and if that's reflected in your statement about whether there are
fewer? Yes, I think that was reflected in our statements in the previous discussion as well.
Okay.
So D was C.
Okay.
And 2E
is the risk adjustment.
That would be also be a C.
Okay.
Yes. Disparity.
Can I just have a second review of? I have to repeat what I said before. You know, I look at this variance in a class, it's a 10-11%. All right, so it means that means, what I explained, 10% variability is due is among the hospital. The rest of the variation is elsewhere. And if I look at the distribution among the hospital, meaning the best and worst, is not that great. So basically, if you go into the initial difference, not big. Majority is not something that let the eyes of the hospital cannot correct. We will have a big effort and big, you know, at the level of the hospital, you have to look on our side for, let's say, not a significant change, the way I see it. And that's a significant issue for us to do on the other side once this measure is passed. That's where I'm coming from, and that's why I sort of kind of repeat myself.
If you look at the performance, the current performance, and we want it to be better, the current performance is actually, as a good outcome, is actually fairly high now, but it's about the same level as, say, performance on the in-hospital core measures was 4 years ago, 70-75%, whereas best in class are performing at 90-98% for the core measures. So, and those are processed.
97%.
For MI, for heart failure is
a low, yeah.
A little bit low. But it seems that the hospital systems have already accepted the fact that the EM visit is good, and I think that's a little bit different than saying that they've accepted that an ED visit is bad. So I think that these two measures are significantly different, and that their acceptability and their usability are also different.
So you were speaking toward 2F, and the meaningful difference?
Meaningful differences in performance, right.
And that goes with some of the data. If you don't have data on the EMM, specifically in MI, then that the difference is just the database. Okay. All right, so 2G was the NA.
Yeah, so what do you want to score 2F?
P? Yeah, P. Indeed, there was just the one set of data sets. Okay. And the disparity of care is... Now, the composite measure, you said they all will be stratified for this. I guess I'm confused on how we score this. If they all have to be, we're going to identify disparities of care in this, so then there's no,
I stayed in it.
The question it addresses whether within the specification of this measure, is there stratification? If there are known disparities around this particular processor outcome, is the measure capable of identifying those and providing information around it such that it could be addressed? It's quite possible that this is another NA situation.
Were disparities identified, or is the chapter aware of disparities in the care? It sounds like, of course there is.
The back is the, and it's a follow-up, and it's the homelessness. And but I thought the entire, but as part of the composite, it was all, that's what I'm, the disparity of care part is, if that's going to be looked at across the composite, then it should be the same within each of the measures, right? It'd have to be. Otherwise, you couldn't do it probably for the composite. So it's NA because there's nothing here, or C because it's going to be.
Well, basically, if there are disparities and the measure is not specified to address disparities, then it's not met.
I mean, they talk about hospital size or anything, that's not.
But if the rationale is that you can't stratify because of statistical issues, or I mean, all those things have to be weighed. But generally, if there are known disparities in the area and the measure is not specified to address those primarily through stratification, then that particular criterion isn't met. Doesn't mean that the whole measure is no good. It just means it's not addressing that one particular criterion. It would be up to the CAP to identify whether disparities is a big issue and should be addressed.
Well, is disparities an issue if you have no primary care physician that you would go to?
Unless
you go to the ER and that becomes your primary care, and then you get the E&M in the ER. But I think that is, frankly.
So are you allowed to do that with the Medicare? You don't have to? I guess you don't have to find a primary. You could be in Medicare with no primary care physician?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could write that down for Medicare. So is that a difference?
Well, the hospital might want to influence people to take care of, better care of themselves on discharge instructions.
So, for example, we're asking the TAP, if there are known disparities that relate to this, follow-up
visit. I have no car, I have no telephone,
right.
I have no house.
Does the measure address that? The answer is no. So your comment there are known disparities. The measure is not specified to identify those disparities. That's just fact.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And I think the overall composite is supposed to, so I guess. Okay, so that would be an N then, right?
Okay.
That's fair. I don't know that we should, I think we should provide the same care. It should be adjusted. There are disparities, but you have to adjust those. That's the whole. We should have to adjust them.
We should be adjusted.
Okay. Meaningful, understandable, and usable information. So, in other parts, or whatever is used, I know this is just a psych patients or whatever. Part of this is how patients understand this. And I guess and here it says that there's no testing is not completed, so I don't know, that's the information that you provide, so I guess I didn't know how else to score up at N.
What we did on the ICD measure was sort of ask ourselves, is this information something consumer, think of yourself as a patient, as a consumer, is this useful to you? Does this have meaning to you? Is this something you want to see information, comparative information about hospitals? Is something payers would be interested in? It would be nice if we had formal testing, but frankly, that's barely happened.
Well, I think that the reference to not being tested is that we didn't, CMS has not gone down this consumer focus group kind of route that we're referring to there.
Right.
I mean, every managed care firm that's probably ever succeeded uses measures like this to make sure that their patient populations are well cared for.
Okay.
Well,
that would be I think we all want. Harmonization. I had trouble with the harmonization because if something is weighted positively and the other things are weighted negatively, and especially when we get to the composite outcomes, I guess. Is it along a similar vein of theme? Is it consistent with the transitions of care being important? Yes. So that's kind of where I was stuck with the
And basically with the harmonization, what we're most interested in is the denominator population identified the same way across measures?
Then yes, because it's already being, those people are already being collected, the data is being collected. Is it distinctive and has additive value? I would say yes. Hopefully. Is this unique? For it, those should be for A. The data should already exist. No electronic source for B. Yes. Exclusion. Now that I understand the missing counted and not counted after discharge, that would be a C. The susceptibility to inaccuracies, errors, and unintended consequences. I guess we get back to that. You know, your visit versus your ED. And the actual, I guess the level of that, but that would be C. The implementation strategy, this information already collected as part of anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Oh, administrative claim.
Overall, minimal cost.
So feasibility C.
Yeah.
Any other comments on this?
I just had difficulty knowing exactly what it is. Okay, we count for that.
Shall we move on to the composite measure?
That is what, 16 or?
16, yes. Is there a majority who would like a five-minute break?
Now that we know that.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
I think we should have a five-minute break as our buzzer changes. All right, so we'll come back and do 60.
No, I think it was like a...
Beautiful day out there.
I do our
calculation.
What is the scale change? So the scale change of the composite number?
Pardon me? Well, it's part of our transition.
Okay.
It's really...
It was when they were submitted?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's being changed back to... It's starting to be the same scale, but...
It was 16, just in case.
It was...
I put it on the schedule for February.
Because it got caught in the middle. That's a good point. We should
discussion about that.
We need you here.
I don't worry about that.
will. I thank you for your feedback.
Sure.
We are going to get those composites to get to the right. I'm not ashamed about that, right? We're waiting for the composites to enter the
room. Oh, that composite. Those composites. The TJ. We wanted them. Please review them, but we haven't gotten the specs. We don't know the details. So let me know that there's still
changes. Did you send the people?
I can send them, but I can't do them that.
How much did you need?
Oh, yeah. I can't understand from your perspective, huh?
I agree totally. Right. I mean, the nice thing is they're all endorsed measures inside it, so it's easy. But we don't actually have the information on
what about the exercise?
Which one? We're going to divide all the outcomes into two parts. We're going to do one first phase of measures that are common in voting bonds, general cross-cutting measures, cardiovascular and pulmonary. Then we'll go back and do the rest again. So it'll still get three by the deadline. And of course, split the work in two.
Work two, but in sequence.
Yes.
Okay, so ICD will be the first batch.
Yes,
this is the first batch.
Yeah, as well as these other ones.
So we'll be done by
October or whatever it is you told us.
Yeah. Well, we can see the October not expedite. We thought it could be more
after. There's nothing faster. Nothing faster than October because we have to get through the entire process.
Okay, so that's
how
why
we don't. No, we sent these proposals. When we got these proposals from the HHS, we sent it to CMS with all those timelines and nobody got to send it. So the project proceeded. We only heard about this a couple months ago and, you know.
I thought either you talked. Mike said he mentioned to somebody.
Yeah, like a month ago.
No, before that. That's why he told us to get expedited.
No, he was concerned about the composites. He's talking about getting the composites brought in. I thought we would try to squeeze them into whatever vehicle we have.
Mm-hmm. No, I think ICD was another one that he mentioned.
I think, it was no longer than 2 months ago. That's the most recent it was. And we heard nothing about this. This proposal went to HHS and CMS 2 months ago.
I think it was that time. Maybe.
No,
I have to get initially. So this is the first time I heard that. Didn't get frost to you.
The nasty virus is messing.
That was impressive. I had never seen a computer react.
What about the nation
I forgot to leave. Somehow he got it. Somehow the virus didn't come in, and I can't, none of the software and diagnostics I've run, I've been able to say Norton Security didn't pick it up. Adware didn't pick it up.
I finally figured that out while we were talking and sent her a file with my check mark on it.
How did you get a comment from this affair?
I did it on
paper. Oh, okay.
I'm always
I was trying to be efficient, and it didn't work very well. She just printed out the paper version.
Yeah.
Okay. The last I found out it prints at 7-Eleven. Burning all those trees. But
yeah, all day long.
That's what I should have done.
You did the kitchen.
Criteria haven't changed.
So I'm having connections.
The new form will actually have those criteria about it. Criteria. You know, specific criteria.
Okay.
The SDS cabbage school? If I have some questions, can I email you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to help. Sure. Absolutely. On the composite and all that?
Yeah.
I'd be happy to help.
Well, I can send you the report.
Well, I'm hoping that the sum is greater than its part.
Let's
talk about the composite for AMI outcome measures. Number 16.
How long my connection lasts. Connected 3 times.
We have Dr. Spindler and Dr. Sitzek again.
So, do you know if the criteria kind of the evaluation letters change? I think is this for both the composites?
Right, and let me just explain. We've been in transition with switching to an online submission form for regular measures, and also we made a little bit of adjustment in the rating scale. We had been using high, moderate, low, and with the change to the new submission, we switched to completely, partially, minimally, not at all. So, unfortunately, with the timing, you're in a time warp with us in terms of the rating system being high, moderate, low, minimal. But they pretty much relate. It's still a 4 level. The last one is not at all. You know, high would be comparable to completely, moderate to partially. Low to minimally and not at all to not at all.
Okay. I think the first thing that's rated is 1D, which is purpose or the objective. I think the objective
in brief description of the measure, that's a typo, right? Having a primary diagnosis of the heart failure.
Right.
It's a typo, right?
Copy over from the other measure, maybe?
I don't have it open yet. So, say again.
It says here, parameter.
Oh, okay.
That's a typo.
Right. It says it's heart. What number are we on? 16. Okay. So, 16, the description says it's heart failure, but it's really about AMI. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or not? So are we on the right one?
Or is it
to be on 16, which is the Q
yep.
on.
Right.
No, but lower down you say it's having a parameter of
the
heart failure.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You can see the title says AMI.
Yeah.
Right.
It's fine.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, the heart failure.
Yeah, right.
It's not good.
The whole idea of adding this together, is that what we're rating on this first one? In terms of looking at, or the purposes and the objectives, the purpose and the objective is would be high, I would think.
Right.
Change that to one, because we're starting with 1D, which is,
right. Mm-hmm. And let me explain the reason. Let me just explain a little bit how these criteria should work together. And I know it's a little bit of a disconnect for you as the TAP since you're not making overall recommendations. But basically, the individual measures have to meet the criteria. So if you had said that all three of those measures, for example, were recommended for endorsement or already were endorsed, the assumption is that they individually met the importance criteria and therefore you didn't have to revisit that again. So that obviously is yet to be decided based on your input to the steering committee, but we will have you go ahead then and move on into the composite evaluation criteria. So the first thing is really what's the purpose and objective, and then does the way the composite is constructed, does it actually meet that purpose and objective?
And then the next section is 1E, conceptual construct for quality. And I
guess I have, are there other examples of composite measures where you have positive and negative measures? Because I still have a problem with using that positive-negative evaluation and management service in a composite measure. And you're trying, and then we can get into this other thing about the weighting, but are there other examples where you have a composite that has a bidirectional component?
Don't believe so.
Not that we've seen so
no,
far.
We've only had a very few composite measures that have been endorsed to date, so we haven't, I don't believe we've, well, I guess the, no, I think they're all in the same direction, but that in and of itself is not, that can be handled through the scoring and, you know, that methodology, so, but I think what you're talking about with that E&M measure is the loan measure itself has some, either could be considered positive or negative depending on your perspective of looking
right.
at
it. So, I mean, when we're asked to say whether or not this is representative of the conceptual construct, I guess it's hard if you know that, if we just say that the E&M is good, but then the E&M can be bad. That's kind of where I have a problem with the conceptual concept. I don't know if anyone else wants to rate that as an H versus, I rate it as an M for moderate versus high.
And the reason is, and then that's fine. And the reason is the
conceptually it's difficult for me to include a measure that's a positive or negative measure.
Any other thoughts about that from the group?
I think it's hard to judge the conceptual construct without thinking of the consequences of its usability, but I think that the developer has done a very good job of describing the components, and then it's up to us to decide whether or not we think that they are meeting a need that's worth reporting.
Right. I just think if you just looked at a composite, it's difficult to say that if you change this, your composite will change that way. Because what component?
Dr. Rich.
So I don't have a problem at all with the conceptual construct. I think that transition business, as we've discussed, is important, it's worth measuring. We don't have a direct way of measuring it, and therefore, there's advantages and disadvantages of the various measures, including the current one, which is the readmissions. And therefore, I think that the idea of having a composite measure is appealing in the hopes that through this composite, you can more accurately reflect the quality of transitional care more than you can with any of the individual measures. So I don't have a problem at all with the conceptual construct of this. The problem I have principally is with the components of it, and in particular the ED visit on it, and which in my opinion doesn't meet the importance criteria because of the issues we discussed before in distinguishing it from the existing 30-day readmission measure. But I think that the idea of having a composite measure to look at this is reasonable. It's not clear to me what the composite measure should consist of. I suspect that if we had a simple composite of 30-day readmission plus the E&M visit modified as previously discussed, that would likely capture all of the information that we would get if we also included the ED visit measure in there. And so it would make sense to me, again, from the perspective of parsimony, to just, instead of adding three new measures, perhaps just adding one new measure, which would be the composite of the 30-day readmissions plus the E&M visit, which would be simpler to collect the data, would be less resource intensive, and have all the advantages of the lower cost and so forth, but still providing the information that the developers are hoping to capture.
But for me, if I skip to the end and you say if your E&Ms are high, when you move it one direction or the other, if you're moving the composite, you can move it all to the E&Ms, which are good, and that's going to increase your composite. But then what happens if that same institution or a comparable institution had a high composite, but it was based at high rates of readmission.
Right. So it's recognizing that it's not perfect, and there's limitations of it, and that can maybe be further developed in the future to try to weed out some of those limitations. But I think that conceptually, it makes sense to me and seems like a reasonable strategy to try to capture the quality of transitional care that occurs following hospital discharge for AMI or heart failure.
Pardon me, just to jump in to clarify. For systems to do better on this composite, they can either reduce the readmissions or increase the ENM. This question of the positive and negative is just a semantic. Sometimes, for example, if you want to include mortality in a measure of in a composite that otherwise has a lot of positive things, you flip it around and call it survival. But that's just for ease of interpretation. Statistically, what this composite says is that you're improving to the extent that your ENMs are going up and your ED visits and your readmissions are going down.
In a composite measure, some events will be high frequency, some will be low, right? So, and you will weigh them. You said so, right?
Yes.
Can you tell me, maybe I'm missing here, what would be the actual factor of ponderation among the readmission and EDD?
They have that. Oh, the weighting?
Yeah.
We'll get to that. So the conceptual construct you would prefer to have is an H, which is fine. That's 1E. So then under 1, we would have to say yes, because we've given all the other ones, pretty much the feature. And then, in terms of that, the components of the composite all have to be, to me, an H, because we've already defined them elsewhere as being well-defined.
For the 2A you're talking about now?
Yeah.
No, this relates now specifically to the specifications of how the composite is constructed. So
that has to do with this weighting thing?
It has to do with what's the numerator of the composite, the denominator, the weighting, the scoring methodology. So that's what your 2A is now talking about, the specifications of the composite. This is about, is it clearly stated so that someone could take these instructions and implement the composite measure?
Okay, just for the waiting room. The waiting is not. Is the weighting in this section?
It's right there. I'm not sure what she's looking at. She has it up there. Had it up there for a moment there.
Oh, okay. I'm there.
Yeah, okay. So this is the whole of 2?
Right. The specifications go on for quite some time. There's a calculation algorithm.
I was thinking more since the weighting was not in 2, is it K?
The justification for the weighting is under, let me find it here.
The weights are given in 1B.
2A. So 2A encompasses the whole thing, whereas each of the other ones go under specific things within 2?
Right.
Okay, I guess. We have to do the other ones before we go back to 2. Okay.
Now, if you look under weighting, is just in the specifications, it's just did they give you the instructions? So, really, the weighting, they say readmission equals a minus 4, ED minus 2, ENM 1. So, they've specified it. Whether you agree with that comes where their justification for their weighting. So this is just about, did they give you specifications that you could implement, that you could, if you had the database, apply these?
So yeah, that's the first 2?
That's everything under 2A.
2A, okay. That should be an H there.
Yep. Okay.
Right.
And then I is the... I is about justification to include it in the composite.
Right, exactly. So,
although you're saying you don't think the ED is recession now. About the ED, because of the ED business?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the justification is included. We might argue about the usability, but the justification is fairly clear. In terms of including it in the composite.
Well, but they gave the correlation coefficient. What they did for their justification is to look at how well, you know, the idea is whether these are, you know, within the same construct. And
right.
So they're looking at the correlation among these. And also, you know, do they overlap a lot? And I'll let you speak to the interpretation of your correlation analyses from these components.
Well, like in so many things, there's a modest correlation here. There's a negative correlation at the patient level between having an outpatient ED visit and having a either a readmission or a ENM visit, I believe. Although I have colleagues on the phone too who can respond to that. Grant, are you there?
Yeah, Chris. ED and hospital readmission are negatively correlated, but the other two are positively correlated.
So this is a question I had about the heart failure one as well. Just misunderstanding the correlation, but there's a positive correlation between an E&M visit and readmissions, suggesting that those people who had E&M visits had a higher likelihood of having
readmissions. They were sick. That was the point I was making before.
Okay. And so that, I think, calls into question the validity of the E&M visit as a measure. If a high score on the E&M visit is also associated with a higher risk of readmission, then what's the value of the E&M visit?
Sick people use everything more. And mm-hmm. So therefore, the point is, to what extent are you deviating from what is expected based on the statistical model set in the expectation?
And you're
and
trying
you're
to adjust that by the weighting, taking one negative and one, keeping the E&M positive.
The E&M is influenced by more than one thing, but sickness is one of them. But what we're trying to instill is not sickness. We're trying to instill, of course, a delivery system response to the fact that they're responsible for a vulnerable population, and then whether it's whatever their scope of influence is to try to get them seen first before things get so bad. We're trying to implement, instill change here, induce change. But in the natural course of events, it's true. When sick people leave the hospital, they'll tend to, you know, they'll see the doctor, they might end up in the ED, and they might end up readmitted or dead. There's a natural correlation between these things because they're all, you know, there's an underlying severity driver.
So I follow you on that, but I still have some concern that by increasing the proportion of patients who have an E&M visit, let's say, within 30 days.
That's deliberately beyond their expected level.
Right. May also actually lead to an increase in the number of people who get hospitalized.
Actually, Chris?
See the physician, and let's say they're not doing so well. The physician put them in the hospital. When if they never saw the physician, they might as
well.
You know,
but we're talking about care transitions, and you know, I think most people would say that identifying and intercepting the patient, even if their utilization outcomes as a result at the individual level is fine. We're talking about group average trajectories here.
Chris, this is John.
John
Chapman.
Hi, John. Go ahead.
I just wanted to interject here because I think there's a little confusion that the correlation with E&M services is with the weight, so the directionality was aligned before we did that correlation. So the positive correlation there means that an increase in E&M services is associated with a reduction in readmission rates.
Oh.
which is exactly opposite of what.
Perhaps sort of illustrating some of the complexity of these measures that go in different directions that was discussed earlier.
I mean, if we've already agreed on the essence of what I said, it's part of the misstatements that can be struck from the record. My husband was confused by it. I would hope that there would be a negative correlation. I looked at it here, I looked at it in heart failure as a positive correlation, and so it raised the question of what's the significance of that, and is it actually correct? It's really a positive.
So he inverted the measurement before doing the correlation.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's reassuring.
Good thing. It means good thing.
Okay, so are we happy to put H's for I and
which one?
Two I and J. Which is the component.
So can we ask what's your interpretation then of the negative correlation between readmission and ED visit?
John or Grant? Because you can't have both. It's fundamental.
Well, my interpretation was that patient comes to a hospital. Some hospitals, particularly if they're elderly or they're have sort of warning signs, they immediately admit them, and therefore their ED visits are significantly lower than another hospital, which might fight harder to treat them on a temporary basis and send them home the same day.
23.9.
So we're still on I.
Yeah.
Down to I and J.
How did you score I then? High?
Yeah.
Okay.
Once we have this clarification. And J as well, because that's the inverse of the negative thing. So this analysis that they did, the only reason I scored it low was because, to me, the weight minus 4 versus minus 2 versus 1 seems arbitrary. I didn't know that there were data for that. This is one was twice as bad as the other, or okay. Anyone have a problem with the L? Is there any?
I don't have any problem with it.
Okay. All right, I'm sure. Does anyone have any other suggestions for weight? I don't know.
Two K.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2K. I just didn't know. That's the analysis to support the difference in the weighting. I didn't know there was any other.
I mean, this is something that if the measure is implemented, this is something that can be looked at retrospectively to determine if this is the
correct
best weighting system. But empirically, to me at least, it seems reasonable.
I don't think it's reported as being gospel. It's a first attempt, and then it's to be looked at over the next 24 months.
Well, Chris said earlier this is admittedly arbitrary.
It is.
Sensible order of magnitude. That's
really they should have another criteria. Is it a sensible? Sensible. The data upon which it's based. Analysis of missing component scores. That there's no non-applicable anything, right? They're not really. Is it how it's going to handle missing data? Is that the idea of that category? Missing component to L. Sorry.
Yeah. So how would that begin?
Analysis of missing component. So
let's see,
is that the idea? Like what? You have to have all three of those things available in order to to identify a composite, or you get thrown out.
Well, of course, the raw data are available with a capital A. I mean, this is the Medicare claims file that this is all running off of. So there's no missing hospitals for that.
And there's no missing component because you have all the claims data.
Right.
So there's a claim or no claim.
Right.
Or
a billable claim that's in the system.
And the reliability testing, so that was neat. The reliability testing of the composite score was an H for what they did. Now, is it that the 2C is the validity of that? So they used the sample with 1,131 hospitals with 99,000 admissions. So is that?
Yeah, the raw ingredients here, of course, are the same measures we've been talking about so far today. So it's the same hospital, same patient, same cohort.
But would this be, yeah, because you have all the components, okay. This isn't any less people. So that would be changed to an H, I guess, but still, in terms of a composite. I guess my problem is if you only have one set of data that you're doing the analysis on and then you're going to create this big composite, it would be nice to have the MCDR action registry. I guess that doesn't capture outpatient. Again, we're only talking about claims data, so if you're only talking about claims data, then that's H.
Right.
Clinical data. The meaningful differences in performance, I had more of a difficult time because of that being a composite. And with the weighting differences. If I'm a patient, I have no idea what this means. Yes. I mean, you do a good job in transitions. Is that all you want to say to them because you have this number? But what is the difference? And again, get back to what is the difference between 90% or 80% or 70% or 60%, because we don't really have a lot of data on what the percent should be or could be.
I think the data actually show that there's a reasonable spread among hospitals when you apply the scores based on the retrospective data, and I think that's what we're asked to look at, if that is going to be a meaningful difference. At least based on the analysis, it appears to me.
So it says the composite's 5th percentile is, negative 2%. And the 95th is 1.9%. So a spread of about 4 percentage points from the lowest 5% to the... Is that what...
Yeah.
Reading that correctly? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, just a reminder, we're in a world where most people consider care transitions and care coordination to be abysmal, and they're not specific incentives yet for improving them, which could come about from your favorite value-based purchasing or from public reporting or other attempts to integrate and create system just in better performance in these handoffs.
So while that, to me, are we supposed to consider how a patient would evaluate this? I think that, or no?
Well, in usability, definitely.
Yeah, I can't see a patient would be able to say if my hospital is 0.1% versus your hospital is 0.4%. But they would make a meaningful value judgment on such a small number.
I put myself in the shoes of a patient, right? That's the position I wouldn't know. I mean, all my background and knowledge, what to really think about it.
Part of that has to do with how this measure would be presented to the consumers. You know, if it were described
top 25%, maybe 25%.
And we do have some precedent for, you know, how we display composites on CMS websites that we would probably borrow from when we go to implement something like this. Currently, we use a 5-star rating system on a number of our websites. For composite.
This is like a 5-star
So the patient wouldn't see that before they'd see the number of stars. It would make it more interpretable.
And who puts the, but who puts the value on that? How do I know what a 4-star, 3-star, 2-star, 1-star? You guys do kind of patient panels or?
Quintiles.
So you have 5 stars. Okay.
But I think the question that has come up about the E&M is that good or bad, you know, does it indicate good care or does it indicate deteriorating condition as an outcome? I guess
sounds like it's
that
like
something that,
at least in the composite as opposed to the individual, sounds like it's accounted for. So that part I'm less concerned about, I think, of this in the composite than it is in a standalone measure that I would have to try and report to a patient. Okay. So should we switch this to an H&M as long as that was where my concern was coming from, how that would be interpreted by a patient. Okay, so the disparity of care, you're saying, to me, we already ranked one as an N, so if we rank one of the composites as an N, we should rank this as an N. Right. Or
no? As someone who's trying to service the, advance the cost here over time, we have the ability to see whether these measures correlate with the race of the patient or the SES or the zip code that the patient lives in and so forth. And if anybody is requesting this and think it would be useful, we could, aside from the hospital-specific snapshot, we could see whether or not there are systematic differences in the scores that are accruing to patients of different racial categories or different geographic areas with different SES components, if that would be useful. That's part one. Part two is that we are talking about hospital discharges, which are relatively low-volume things. So splitting it by hospital, by race, by SES, gets into the small cells that probably wouldn't allow us to do that. And probably, as most of you know, when quality differences are examined in hospital care, by and large, the largest differences are across hospitals, not within hospitals when it comes to disparity. So the splitting within a hospital by disparity seems to be less informative and less capable. But if it would be added value to show how the extent to which these outcome measures correlate with patient disparities or SES and racial categories, we can provide that.
I think the question would be, if that information is not something that's readily available otherwise and you have the means by which to provide information we really don't have a good handle on, I think it would benefit, you know, not just this process, but in general, to have a better data-driven information about that whole question. And if it, like you say, if you can do that, I think everyone would benefit, frankly. I think it would give us a much better answer to the question of, is this a disparity sensitive measure?
Yep.
What do we know about it around disparities? And how could the measure potentially be used to address those disparities? I'm sure the small cell issue is absolute, but perhaps, you know, on some way of breaking it down nationally, regionally, by state, by whatever.
Yes,
something would be helpful.
I'm a managed care provider. I mean, I want to know if I'm...
Recommendations along those on a way, how could we use this measure to look at disparities that could prompt something?
Yeah, that's right. And for extrapolation purposes, too, to other patient populations that have come up to some degree in the conversation, to the extent to which knowing that low SES, for example, really explains a lot, would be useful for everybody to know.
Okay, so the weekend is, instead of the not applicable, then that would be changed to an H. They're going to be doing that.
Yes, but we haven't done it yet.
Yes.
Now, what are you saying then?
So should we change?
With an
should we leave it as an
No, with an
after.
No,
that
could be improved.
Okay.
No information pending.
And then, based upon the data, the measure hasn't been tested, so... and testing is not completed, so I don't know.
I guess we need some clarification on what you mean by testing not completed, because typically, NQF historically has not granted time-limited endorsement to any complex measures, and that's actually becoming formal policy. So what did you have in mind when you said testing was not yet completed?
That's
yet to be
Well, others of my colleagues might join in on this, but I think that this is echoing what came up earlier. A similar caveat was put up there. CMS, before CMS uses the measure, obviously they march through a number of steps, dry runs, public reporting tests, and that sort of thing. And even before that, they have a beneficiary choice, is that the right phrase, inside of CMS that actually brings this in front of focus groups and consumers and say, does this make sense? And, you know, 5 stars, 4 stars, or what have you. And in that sense, CMS hasn't gone through that public reactive thing. That testing hasn't been done. I also made the comment before. I mean, managed care firms, if they only measure two things, they measure hospital admits or hospital days and ER visits. So it's not as if we're bringing to the table here things, you know, newfangled sort of questionable metrics for what it means to have care coordination. In that sense, these are field tested for literally a couple of decades. But in the formal sense of, has this been put in front of Medicare beneficiaries for the sake of their actionable reaction, then that hasn't happened.
Okay. So this is specifically related to focus groups and the consumer use versus, because what we really meant here was all of the development and testing, reliability, validity, risk adjustment, weighting, have you actually performed these things, and you provided all that information, so...
Well, here we're talking about usability, which I always interpret to mean, you know, the user end of things, not the input part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We tried to document, as you said, so somebody could replicate it, if not just understand every step, but in terms of people reacting to it, as Medicare beneficiaries, that hasn't been tested. Certainly.
So just be an N in that regard? Or there's no NAs? Is there an NA now?
It's usability is always applicable. The question is whether it's been demonstrated. So, from your perspective, whether this would be usable for providers and consumers. So if you...
It's not been demonstrated yet, but
do you want to bump that up because you think it would be useful? Several of you have made comments about you're concerned about how it would be interpreted and whether it would be useful. I don't know where you're falling on that.
I think what Chris is talking about, dry run, consumer testing, that's not the testing that you are
right,
talking
that's not
about.
What we were referring
so
to.
So
right?
I think that we are not saying it's not tested. It's just that we probably misinterpret what you mean by testing. So I don't think
right.
that we are considering the same thing as you are thinking about.
All right, so one more time, how should we interpret that?
Okay, so there has been no testing about usability, but the rest of the testing has been completed. So this is about usability, and you've had this situation with all the measures you've looked at so far. There's been no testing about usability, but you made judgments about whether it would be useful, understandable and useful information to people who would be looking at these data, consumers, payers, providers.
Well, I mean, just the risk of sounding like a little bit like a broken record. I mean, we've actually, in the documentation, cited literature where these measures are used, stepping away from the composite for a minute, where these measures are actually used to test the efficacy and the ROI of care coordination efforts, attempts to connect the hospital to the community and so forth like that. And so in the literature and in demonstrations and pilot projects, these measures have been used, if we're in the right category.
Right. Well, that's useful information that does demonstrate that it's been used from that standpoint. So.
Well, the individual ones have been used.
Right, right, exactly. Not the composite. You're right, you're right.
Right. That's why I drew the distinction. The
right.
Composites now.
So, that's up to you all. Obviously, as we've talked, it's not been tested for usability, but what is your evaluation of the usefulness of having this type of composite measure for either public reporting or quality improvement?